Why? Are you ready to be wet? Are you ready to be wild? Because it is Wednesday, after all, and it's our new day. Sit down, celebrate with you, and gosh, answer all those turf problems that you have, answer those questions that are burning through your mind. Really, if it's that bad, maybe save your marriage, because you have fucked up your lawn so incredibly badly that only the
either
green dog...
Either you've effed it up, or if you haven't effed it up, we want to keep people from spending their life savings on nonsense that doesn't make a difference, that doesn't, that doesn't work. I mean, because can you imagine the scene? Honey, you spent $999 on lawn products. What the fuck?
You know what, Ray? I think what we need to do is we need to write into the chemical companies and find out if they can make like a version of Xteris that gives women orgasms. If we could do that, I think we'd solve many, many of the political capital problems that exist in lawn care America.
RD,
I don't think
the chemical companies need to worry about that, because, as you know, I largely have that issue solved.
Oh wow! All right. On that note, so we're gonna do about an hour's worth of questions here. Matt is off tonight. He is working late at the plant, trying to get some stuff finished up. It is the spring rush, not just for him, but for everybody here. And we do sincerely appreciate you spending some time with us. I know you guys are probably out there, pushing fertilizer spreaders, right on slinging bags of pre-emergent everywhere, spraying stuff. So really do appreciate the time spent tonight. I am going to read this question from Melissa that we got, Ray, and then I've got to step away for just 1 minute. 1 minute. And okay, I'll come back, but I want you, this is right up your alley. This is right up your alley. All right. So Melissa says, Hello, I've been enjoying your videos. Do you have a printable guide of all pre-emergence and post-emergence with their MOA and efficacy? Oh, I got to think about that one. I found your video very helpful and would prefer a printable version for learning in more detail. Also, I was wondering if I can get your input. I have Bermuda that's just coming out of dormancy. This is our third year applying pre-emergent. We did Spectacle Flow in the fall, and I'm getting ready to put down the second half of a split app of Prodiamine. I have a ton of Spurge currently, almost as bad as I've had it during August the last of the 2 years. I hit it with spot sprays of Roundup, but after a ton more came up after the rain, and my grass has zapped out of dormancy, so I think I need to switch post-emergent options. Last year, I applied Speed Zone Southern and Celsius when it got hot. What do you recommend as a post-emergent for me now? Also, what should I add on to the Prodiamine? I want to prevent Spurge. I always get in August, so I was trying to find an add-on. Grassy weeds have not been much of a problem for us. Thank you, Melissa. Melissa, thank you for providing such a detailed question, because seriously, like, you gave us a lot of info, and I sincerely appreciate the way that you asked that. So, Ray, why don't you dive in? I'll step away. I'll be back in about 60 seconds. What do you think about Melissa's post-emergent question, and what should she add on to the Prodiamine to maybe prevent her Spurge problem come August?
Okay, Melissa, this is like pretty easy. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's cheap, but then this is fairly simple to do, because usually, first of all, if you know you have a terrible Spurge problem, this is where I start to reach for the Gallery DF, also known as Isoxaben DF, because Isoxaben is specific to broadleaf weeds, especially Spurges, and good time to apply that is actually with your second app of your Prodiamine split. And as far as post-emergent options, right now is as good a time as any for you to broadcast apply Speed Zone Southern. And the thing about treating or dealing with Spurge is I don't like to see people spot spraying, because with Spurge, a lot of times those suckers have two little tiny purple leaves hiding in the Bermuda, and they're not readily visible. So you go out there, you spot spray, you think you got it, but then here is the little two-leaf Spurge that was two-leaf last week that is now that humongous honking monster in your lawn daring you to do something about it. So I actually recommend that if you are going to spray for Spurge, broadcast spray. And the other thing is Celsius. Celsius is not particularly effective on Spurge. What was probably doing the heavy lifting in your tank mix at that time was actually the Speed Zone Southern, because I know Speed Zone Southern drops Spurge real quick. So I would literally save Celsius for instances where you need to do things like remove Bahia or carpet grass or crabgrass from your Bermuda lawn. I mean, that's like my idea, but the other thing too is that if you wanted to do something that had both pre-emergent and post-emergent effect, go review Matt's video on metsulfuron methyl. But understand what you're getting into with metsulfuron methyl, because as I told Matt, every time I open that bottle and I realize that I'm only going to be applying 0.25 to 0.5 ounces per acre, it gives me a moment of pause. So yeah. just be aware of what you're doing with that stuff, because quarter ounce to half ounce per acre is selective weed control. 1 to 2 ounces is dirt. And when I say dirt, most vegetation is no longer existent, including trees. Just keep that in mind.
You know, just be careful. Just be a little careful with that one.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah, just be careful. Just watch out, because MSM is no joke.
Hell yeah. All right, so we're going to jump over to Jeremy's question. Jeremy has said, I am interested in learning more about pellet applicators for wetting agents and their place in the home lawn tool bag.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, so the pellet applicators, you'll see them commonly used in golf. And really what they are used for is more of like localized dry spots. So, you know, there are areas that for a couple different reasons, buildup of organic acids, you know, in the upper part of the soil structure, right, that prevent water from getting in, so they become hydrophobic, right? They propel water. Is one reason, and we'll use these tablets or these wetting agent pellets to effectively hit those areas very specifically and targeted with a wetting agent application, trying to break up those organic acids. Some of it can be soil related, some of it can be other reasons, right? Even if you wanted to get, you know, if you have a knob or a high spot in your lawn that is, you know, predisposed to drying out sooner, those tablets can help hold that moisture in there. It's more temporarily than what you would see from a traditional wetting agent, whether it be a granular one or a liquid one. So I think there's a place for it. One thing that I've been particularly fond of is like sod. If you put sod down and trying to use those, and I've even hooked them up, Ray, to you know, a little sprinkler setup, whether it be, you know, just a half moon oscillating like sprinkler, or if you mix, you know, you put
a
5,000
like impact or an impact stand.
Yep, or a 5,000 series.
Yeah, or rated 5,000. And just let that thing spin around and soak the sod. I mean, that's actually, you know, Ryan, I have a use case for those pellet applicators for wetting agents. Mm-hmm. And that's if I ever come into a situation, especially when the grass is on some kind of a grade and it's drying out and the turf is just not taking in water. Before I attempt to irrigate it, I hook up that gun and the pellet, and I just start hosing it down with that wetting agent. Because, you know, with wetting agents, you need water, okay? You need water to get the product into the soil profile. So that's kind of why, like that other week when we were watching that video of that person stirring together all kinds of fertilizers and supplements with his wetting agent and
treasure
spraying it on at a gallon per 1,000 square foot. I'm thinking to myself, that's not the best way to optimize your wetting agent application. Whereas with that pellet in the gun, Ryan, I'm standing there and I'm just, going over it until I see the water soak in, and therefore solving the problem, right?
Yeah, and that's one thing I will say, especially a lower height cut or a lower height of cut turf, is you do get that kind of almost immediate feedback or response where, you'll see the stuff just literally sitting on the surface, and then all of a sudden you'll see it bubbling, and then after that you'll see
it just sucks in. It just sucks in. I mean, I see that, and that's the kind of thing that I'm on alert for, Ryan, because a lot of times the turf that I'm dealing with is less than 3/4 inch tall. Typical height of cut is a half inch or less.
Very, very easy to pick up on it when it's in a situation like that. So good question. So to answer the question definitively, I don't think it's a bad thing to have. It certainly wouldn't be, those applicator guns or the setups are, probably north of $100 now. I don't know that that's where I would deploy my capital to, unless I had in these localized dry spots are not like usually something that just comes and goes. They're usually pretty persistent. And so these wetting agent tablet applications are not simply I'm going to do it once and I'll be okay. It's more of a, every time it gets really hot and really dry out, you probably are going to need to do it. So I'd rather see you invest in the proper application equipment for a liquid wetting agent, something that you can do. And if you're not really into liquids like that, there are some really, really good granular options out there in the marketplace too. One that comes to mind, Aquatrols makes a product called Aqueduct. Heritage
Aqueduct
PG. Yeah, Aqueduct G. There's a what is Heritage PPG calling theirs? I have to look it up. But anyway, there are some other good granular options out there. So I caution you, if you don't have sprayable means, you can do it somewhere. AquaSync. That's what it's called, I think.
I have a third way of dealing with hydrophobic areas.
What's that?
It involves a 2-inch auger bit.
Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, build your own hydroject.
Well, you drill out those water rejecting areas and you repack those holes with some clean sand and solve your problem once and for all. Because to me, wetting agents, a lot of times they are just more like a stopgap or a temporary measure until you can actually correct the underlying problem. That's how I view wetting agents.
Yeah, I think there's some of that. I also think that in some places it's hard. It's scale, right? That you may never do scale. That or you may never get you. It's almost like taking cholesterol meds instead of changing your diet and exercising or something like that. So, look at it like that and go from there. So,
yeah.
All right. Let's see who else is having family problems because of turf. Okay. Connecticut Cubanican, our favorite parole officer supervisor, has asked us here. If I knew then what I knew now, I would have never bought the bag of Anderson's 200 lean and green I found in my basement. Basically, 0.053 pounds of AMS and a bunch of coated rust in the bag. Yeah, listen, we've all been there. We've all purchased a product that, by the sounds of it, it was going to be magic in a bag or a bottle, and unfortunately it wasn't. Don't hate on yourself for doing it. I do think that you have to take those chances and try. Just know that the 80-20 rule is in place, right? So, you're going to get 80% of your results from 20% of the shit that's out there in the marketplace, right? And the last 20% is usually just good management, being conscientious, and learning from your fuck-ups. Like, that's really, I don't want to, oversimplify it, but it can be that simple. It really can. So, take that for what it's worth. Okay. Ray, any other thoughts on the product bandwagon? Buying the latest and greatest strain of weed at the dispensary, the turf version of that?
You know what? I've always taken a very conservative approach where, when a new product comes to market, a lot of times, unless there's validated studies to go with that product, I often hang back and see if that product is still around 5 years later. I mean,
fair.
You know what, Ryan? I'm the opposite of an early adopter.
See, I'm an early adopter. That's why
I'm an old timer. I mean, I'm like the old timer because like all of my mentors, they cautioned me about jumping on to new stuff. You know, I mean that's what they told me. They said, watch out for new stuff because oftentimes the new stuff turns out to be a scam and snake oil.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some good and some bad over the years. I mean, what am I thinking of? It was bad.
Imprelis?
dude, listen, I thought of that as a good one. That was one of those unfortunate ones. You know, Imprelis was akin to your favorite TV show that gets canceled after one season. You're like, man, this was just getting good. And you know, yeah, the tree
good.
Yeah, the conifers and the tree thing, not so great, but if you knew where to use it, it was an incredibly effective product. Incredibly effective.
Well, gee, Ryan. I mean, my only thought on that is that, hey, I realized that active ingredient is now something that I deploy in industrial and non-crop areas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's where I do it is when somebody says, okay, I don't want any trees or vines to ever exist in this area ever again.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, one of the options.
Jeez.
And it works all well. Right. It works well.
I believe it. All right. Dan, our man, Dan.
Dan
is asking, what is the best way to eliminate spray drift in high winds? I tried using cones at the end of spray nozzles. Let's just say the vegetable gardens have been destroyed by the drift. That's a tough one. I mean, South Florida, you know, not too many calm days, especially this time of year, right? So, Ray, this is going to be a balance between coverage and droplet size, right? And what the target application
coverage
is,
drops,
right?
And not only that, at the end of the day, label is the law. Okay, sure. Label is the law, and therefore, Dan, I'm going to have to advise you that you are so fortunate that Florida DEP is not notified about your screw up, because
that wasn't it. It wasn't his. We don't know whose it was.
Yeah. But then, to the person that is attempting to apply in strong winds, my only words to them are, you are on borrowed time, and you're very lucky in that to date, this doesn't happen to the wrong person who knows the right people to call. You know, I will leave it at that. I will leave it at that, because let me tell you, here in Hawaii, spray drift is something that will get the Department of Agriculture crawling up your asshole with the probes, and no, they are not going to ensure your comfort. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah. And so, Dan, I think from a practical standpoint, you know, you look at something like an air-inducted nozzle, and obviously that's the balance between coverage and droplet size that should help you in some winds. When you say wind, it's a very relative term, right? If we're talking 5-6 miles an hour, you probably get by okay. Double digits, it's a no-no pretty much with whatever you do. It's going to be almost impossible to not be Alan Hain wearing the poo-poo-stained khaki pants out there in North Dakota. So, in that
and turning
regard,
all the trees downwind of him white, and turning all the trees of him downwind. Yeah, I mean that's the thing. Just saying, Ryan.
That's true. So Dan, try the air inducted if you can. See how that goes. And Ray is right. The the label is the law, and you need to just be conscientious. I know that it doesn't always fit in with our schedule sometimes, right, to spray when we should be spraying. So just take that into mind too. You might spray earlier in the morning when winds are calmer, things like that, and just work around it. So
and what you may also consider, because there's times when I'm dealing with marginal conditions in that I actually use these viscosity modifying agents in the solution. And what that does is that further reduces the amount of fine droplets generated by a given nozzle. And that tends to help, but then even then it is no panacea, because I'm frequently looking at wind such that even if my spray solution is going through an air-inducted nozzle, even though I've thickened or modified the viscosity of the spray solution, the wind is still blowing hard enough to shear that spray into fine droplets as it exits the nozzle. Mm. And at that point, I don't want to be that guy.
Don't be that guy.
I don't want to be that person, because I'm well aware of what I'm applying and how active it is. Because, for example, do you know what my routine application is at this time of the year for weed control, Ryan?
Would it be MSM? Or is it a little late, I
guess? MSM and triclopyr. MSM and triclopyr.
Okay. Yeah. So, and you got to be careful with the triclopyr a little bit, you know.
No, you have to be freaking careful about the MSM. Because it doesn't take much to ruin a plant. I mean, you know, ornamentals and fruits and vegetables, they are extremely sensitive to sulfonylurea herbicides. It don't take much.
Don't take much on cool season. I've waxed some for sure. Let's see here. I just want to make a note. This is tonight's is about an hour long show. We'll take questions here up until about 9:50 p.m. That's Eastern time. Those of you that live in the right place at the right time, earlier for those of you that don't, and later for those of you in Bulgaria that are watching us live right now. But 9:50, we'll cut it off. We'll answer whatever questions we have left and go from there. We answer Dan's questions. This gentleman here, 12233E, is, I believe this is asking Ray, how big of holes are you talking? And sir, God damn it, don't talk about Sheila that way. All right? I'm not going to have it. But anyway, no. I think he was referring to your augering or drilling.
Oh, to drill into the ground? Usually you need like a 2 to 3 inch hole, and you go down 12 inches.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I call that basically a Barry Wood-sized hole.
Yeah, you know, Ray, have you seen that show My 600-Pound Life before? Ever heard about that show? Yeah, I think Telly Coleman's penis was on an episode featured in that, and it made a hole nearly that big, maybe just a little bit bigger. So, Telly, if you're watching, we saw the episode. All right, moving on to the next question here. Our friend, Mr. Farmer, Jordan Farm, he is asking, spring plan was a small amount of N at like 0.15 pounds per thousand in a weed cleanup. Henbit and clover mostly. Was planning on 0.367 ounces. So he's using the dry flowable of quinclorac and triclopyr. One pint per acre enough. Add any surfactant with the N is safe.
I would send it right now because MSO.
So MSO in there with N? I don't know if I've ever done that.
Yeah, it would be okay. It would be okay because here's the thing is that if we're talking about, for example, some urea or AMS at that low rate that he's stating here, 0.15 pounds in, and then with the triclopyr and with the quinclorac, you know, Ryan, I actually did that, a mix like that, to Matt's project lawn in outside of Knoxville. I actually did that to a project lawn, and last I heard from Eric is that the weeds went down like a shot, and his grass was still there after that application, so it's safe.
Yeah, that's fair. I think
it's safe.
0.367 and 16. You could probably take the triclopyr up a little bit. I wouldn't be afraid to take it up to all the way up to 24. Yeah, 24, I would be afraid.
Even that'll 32 eat up. Is fine.
That'll eat up that clover. It will. Yeah, those are, clover's those are done. Two pretty strong clover remedies there.
Clover kills,
And we don't even have a store to buy them on, so we can't. I guess we can't recommend them, right? If we don't have a place to buy them, gosh, sacrilege.
Oh, you mean we don't have a online store for these products? Oh,
it's absurd.
Shame on us.
Man. All right, let's see here. Okay, Midnight Monoculture would like to know. I'm sorry about your Midnight Monoculture right now, too. It probably looks like dormant Bermuda. I can only say that because I have some, too. Let's see here. Best liquid grub preventative and when to apply. Celeprian? Question mark. Cool Season Turf, Philly, PA. Yeah, if you want to go with a liquid, a Celeprian would be totally fine. It's a little early right now, so I would probably wait if you're in Philly. Anytime, really, you got a pretty big wide window there. So I'll go ahead and say between April 1st and Mother's Day is totally fine. And just go ahead and you can get away with using the 8 fluid ounce per acre rate if you're using Celeprin. I know it comes in that nice handy dandy small bottle now. So that's probably your best bet to apply. Tetrino is another product that's available. Same class of insecticides. However, it only comes in a, I believe, a quart or half gallon bottle. So, and it's really, really
expensive. It's a half gallon.
So.
Yeah, that's a half gallon for $500, Ryan. $500 for that half
gallon.
It'll
last,
jeez.
It'll last you a long time. It's cheaper. It's cheaper per thousand or cheaper per acre than a Celeprin. But Celeprin and the folks at Syngenta were nice enough to put that in that little 5 ounce bottle. It makes it real easy and off we go. So, okay. So there you go. So get your little bottle of Celeprin, Midnight Moon Culture. Anytime, April 1st to Mother's Day, get it down. Make sure that you get it either irrigated in or you get a rainfall pretty close after. You can have that stuff sitting out there. It's a lot better than other options as far as photodegradation and being able to sit out in the sun and all that good stuff. But you should try and tie them up with the rain. So rain's imminent. You got a chance to spray anytime in that window. Go for it. It'll be fine. All right. Yep. Jay Pink gave me the blue balls emoji, which none of you can see. Not really in real life, but more so just the emoji in the chat. I want to make that clear. Let's see here. Richard Harwell. Sounds like a nice guy. He says, I'm in an area south of Seattle. So he is not at 9 o'clock right now. It's much earlier for him. I did a renovation a little over a year ago, and I'm trying to control Poa annua. Can I use ethofumisate this spring? Temps are in the mid 50s and 60s right now. So we just did a renovation a little over a year ago. Yeah, I would have no problem with that. There's no problem with that right now. What I will say is that in your area, given your climate, is that you're fighting a losing battle. I'm not going to sit here and rip you for doing that. It's what everybody in that area does if they're trying to stay clean. Just understand that all you're doing is slowing down the rate at which you will get to a threshold that you don't like seeing how much Poa annua you have and you'll want to renovate again. So take that into consideration. The other thing too, is if you're just going to do a typical kill off and interseed into dead material, ethofumisate is and does have pre-emergent properties. So if you're going to do a reno, kind of plan ahead. If you get on the ethofumisate train, make sure you're kind of out of that pre-emergent window. Ray, anything to add on the pre-emergent properties of ethofumisate and sort of the lag time I was talking about there, and or just the fact that Pacific Northwest and Poa annua are kind of like made for each other?
They're made for each other, for sure. Here's the good part, Ryan, is that did you know that both perennial rye and turf-type tall fescue are rather tolerant of Acephumacate at any growth stage from seed to post-emergent to even mature. Did you know that those two grasses are highly tolerant versus, say, Kentucky bluegrass or bent, to where it can be a real good strategy, for example, to go like a perennial rime monostand or a turf type tall fescue monostand and plan on having acephumacate as part of your weed control program from here on out to just constantly discourage that poa annua. I mean, in other words, put it on your calendar. You're going to apply etho in the fall, etho in the spring, and then conventional crabgrass pre-emergent as needed in the spring after your etho application, and that should just largely discourage your poa issue. Because, and the other thing is, with acephumacate, that plays very well together with the following two herbicides. If you actually do have emerged poa, sulfentrazone or tenacity. I mean, you can do things like add sulfentrazone or tenacity to your acephumacate application to get a little more contact action on that poa, because the way etho works is it's a soil applied herbicide that gets into the poa systemically and then causes a reduction of vigor in that poa. It's not a spray it and 2 weeks later it's dead kind of a thing. It's a slow and painful decline.
There you go. Slow and painful. And it really is. It is trying to keep everything off there. So, all right, let's do this. So Richard, best of luck. Keep us posted, seriously.
Let us know.
Telly Coleman says, "Do not tell TK that I was on my 600-pound life with my penis." Listen,
We're not
I didn't put it
telling.
on, I didn't put it on the scale. You did, so surely TK knows where that scale is too. What were we talking about? How big holes were before? Oh, that's right.
Yeah, we're talking about
Brent,
drilling holes.
drilling holes. Where's Kenny Cooper when you need him? All right, Brent, our good friend Brent is asking, what is the best and most polite way to say no to potential new customers when you are at your max capacity? And further down here, Donovan, Christopher, start a waiting list, tell them you're full, but you'll contact them if there's an opening. So there's one strategy. Ray, how do you feel with the waiting list idea? Why don't we start there?
You know, that is something that I don't place much stock in. I mean, for me, I kind of tell people the truth of the situation, and if possible, I would refer them to somebody that could suit their needs. You know, that's how I handle it, is I basically turn people over to somebody that might be able to help them. Because a waiting list, you know, to me, a waiting list implies that you have a very high turnover as well. And when somebody tells me waiting list, that almost is a red flag to me. That means that people are dropping out as quickly as they're onboarding.
I don't take it like that. I take it more to the fact of that, you know, hey, one, you know what your limits are. Two, you have tried to put people on waiting lists. The thing I worry about with a waiting list is just how likely it is. I mean, I think definitely think that you should capture that person's information, enter them into your CRM, and make offers to them, you know, that once you are able to provide services and things like that. But you know, getting on somebody's waiting list is probably, you know, is effectively telling them no, but it's a good way to keep them in the fold. So a few things that I have ideas on here is, one, have some good relationships. You know, you can look at folks as competitors in your area. I know there's always people that you're like, I don't like that person or that guy or that company or, you know, whoever they are. I'm not saying it has to be them, but you know, make some friends around the area. Because number one, there's more than enough for you to eat. There's people that have that. Yeah. There's people that have that scarcity mindset, right? That, oh gosh, there's never going to be enough. And if I give that guy one client, he's going to put me out of business, and I'm going to be living in a fucking cardboard box and eating cold ramen. You're like, no, like there is enough work out there for you to be able to eat and be fine. So make friends with these people, you know, talk shop, talk business, and just say, hey, listen, I'm getting pretty close to capacity. If I threw you some accounts as they came across my desk, would that work for you? And likewise, if I get, you know, a little bit slower, you know, would you do the same for me? Build some respect, build some rapport. You know, there's other ways that I think you guys can help each other out over time. You know, get a little bit more buying power on one product versus another with vendors, and maybe trade back and forth, things like that. So it would be good to do something like that. The other thing too, if you have a waiting list, or if you have, you're at capacity, absolutely. And I think Brent did this and he's anguished over this over the wintertime, but raise your prices. Raise your prices. Everybody that comes in the door from this moment on, Brent, they are paying, I'll say 25% more. Just say 25% and see what happens, right? The worst thing that happens is they tell you to take a flying fucking leap. And hey, it probably ends up the same way it would if you just said, nope, can't do it. So, but I think you'll also have some that say, yeah, I'll do that. And they value you and they want you to be the one that treats their lawn. Do you make room for them? I don't know. I mean, maybe you get into a cycle where you're able to continually charge higher and higher prices, and the people that are shitbags that are in your client list that you really don't like to serve, and even if they paid you good money, you'd probably still tell them to take a flying fucking leap off the Grand Canyon. Every year you can say, hey, you know what? It was really, really nice, but I bought you a plane ticket to Arizona. Get the fuck out of my life. Bye. And that's how you build a better and better and better customer base. Okay? So take that for what it's worth. Raise your prices. Respect yourself. Find some friends around the area, trade back and forth, tips, tricks, products, whatever, right? And help each other be better. Some of the best and most successful companies I know, people that, you know, I know one and two owner operations that are doing well into the eight figures, right? You know, $10, $15 million a year companies that have best friends that are right next door that do, you know, nearly as much or, you know, maybe a little bit less than they do, but they share stuff all the time because they know that there's more than enough work out there. Be that person, be the bigger person, go out and find these people, and don't forget to raise your prices. There you go. All right. Five minutes left. You know, Ray, it used to be at Arby's, you know, you could go get five roast beef sandwiches for $5. Those days are long gone. However, you can, in the next 5 minutes, type as many roast beef sandwiches worth of questions as you want. And we will give them to you for less than $5. In fact, only $4 if you want to join our Patreon right now. www.patreon.com/burnandreturn. Check us out over there because we're worthless, science-based shills, just like Travis always wanted us to be.
You are there a fucking pussy.
And Spencer, too. You got that, too. Let's see here. Tanner Moore. Tanner Moore says, Ryan, I want to test Bermuda 365SS and Iron Cutter, 84-square-foot parkway strip. Hook a brother up this season with some Iron Cutter plugs or sprigs. I am just 2 hours south of you in North Kentucky. Tanner, if you come up here in about like the second week of June, I will have a metric shit ton of sprigs worked up from aggressively verticutting a lot of Iron Cutter. So if you come up here, I will graciously fill you up with all these sprigs that I possibly can. Nothing more, nothing less. So take that for what it's worth. All right. Let's see. If we have other questions, Brent, see, look at that. Brent says he's 100% on board with that. That's good. Telly has also said that he has a $5 foot long. So, you know, that just tells you that, you know, Telly's a foot long and that coupons never expire and at Telly's house. So, take that for what it's worth. All right. All right, Ray, what was I going to ask? On that front. Oh, and is there? I'll be there, dead ass. Perfect. Tanner says he's going to be here. Okay. Bermuda grass, non-overseeded, okay? Cleaned up really, really well with Roundup here while dormant. So it's pretty darn clean. There's a little bit of ryegrass still hanging on. It's probably too late to finish it off with Roundup, so we probably will have to use a sulfonylurea here later on this year. But my question is, as far as a pre-emergent, I think we're gonna stick with Ronstar here this spring, but never done the Spectacle Flow, and I don't know how to time this up with Overseed. We're trying to plan ahead, right? So I'm asking a question that's really 6 months in the future. Don't. Well, we're not going to Overseed. We're not going to Overseed. I'm trying to plan this out, not with Overseed, but to the point that I don't want to spray. I did say Overseed. My fault. Trying to time this up with actively growing Bermuda, because we're actively growing until about probably the third or fourth week of September, and it's still green, but it's not growing super well in October, and then we're completely dormant by November. So what would the appropriate timing on that Spectacle Flow be for us here in the very, very northern tip of that transition zone?
Okay, what you're looking at is a 2-app split of Spectacle in August, and then one more time in September.
Is that 4 and 4?
And here's why. 4 and 4. Yep, 4 and 4. And that's going to basically be bye-bye to poa or any other contaminating cool season grass seed that might want to, you know, appear in that Bermuda field. Yeah, Ryan? But it's very important. Do it as a split.
Do it as a split.
Do it as a split. All right. Do it as a split, because here's what happens when somebody gets a wild hair up their butt and dumps on 8 or 9 ounces of Spectacle all at once. They root prune the fudge out of that Bermuda. It's not pretty. It's not nice. Right. So split it.
Jeez, busy bees. Late July and early September. I don't know about that, dude. There's nothing. Well, we really don't August, get germination. We get germination August. Of posts sometimes start in August, but very seldom. It used to be August 20 years ago. It's definitely later now, so I'm not so worried about that. All right. What looks to be our last question here, because the cutoff buzzer has arisen. And we'll offer up that one too. But Woody, 8625, would like to know, warm season grass getting green up, when to start fertilizing? So, Ray, why don't you start and I'll finish.
Okay, you start feeding when you are definitely out of dormancy and your overall trend is towards absolute warming and active growth. In other words, what you don't want to do is you don't want to fertilize so early that you're pushing a flush of growth right about when another freak frost or freeze hits in mid-spring, because Woody's in Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken. And so I'd probably say, if we can, think about our first feeding end of March or in April, but not right now. Right now is a little bit early. Yeah?
Yeah.
What you think, Brian?
Same thing. If he's in Tennessee, that's what I was going to really try to understand where he was. Figured it was somewhere like that, because seeing good green up. Saw pictures from Savannah this morning. Really good green up down there, and which is about on time, maybe a tad bit early, but looking good. So wait, hold out, get yourself to April 1st. I'll tell you when to do it, and I've heard Matt say this before too and swear by it, but about Masters time, go for it. Press the gas if you're down in the southeast, even if it's not right, just because it feels good. You know, how's that, Travis? Did I do it right? Is that sciencey enough for you? All right. We had 3 days of frost in Nashville this week. Telly, you need to move further south. That's not my problem, man. Okay. That all being said, that is an early end of the show. If you want to, you can certainly hang out with us in the after show. We'll do a quick one here, a couple videos. I don't know what they'll be because I haven't done any prep for that yet, but we will take a look, dive in a little bit deeper, and just talk real talk, Ray. Adult talk, adult humor. And it's the only way that you can get that is to, again, subscribe to us at our Patreon and get yourself connected with our Discord server. Get yourself connected with some Zooms. We haven't done a Zoom in a while. Gosh darn it. We will figure out an endeavor to do that here, Jay Pink. Maybe this weekend or next. We'll see what we can do. And you know, just have a good time. Maybe just put us down for Saturday night, J Pink. Put it on the calendar. We'll do it. We'll do it live. Okay? So you heard it here. The only way you're going to get access to this. If we can do the outro, I don't know if you can pull it up this quick. Can we do the outro where they play the band to Bill Riley? I haven't seen that one in a while, and I really need that good chuckle. So anyway, www.patreon.com/burnandreturn. Go on there. $4, $12, $20, anything you want gets us in the door and hang out with a bunch of like-minded people that like to have fun and make fun of people that are just not doing it the right way, which we're about to do. Have a great night. Love you.
I can't do it. We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I can all write it and we'll do it live. Fucking thing sucks. 5, 4, 3. That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.
That was way louder than I thought it would be.
It was perfect.
Sorry for your eardrums.